At a time when awareness of environmental issues seems to be growing among adults, today's children are spending less time outside in nature than ever before. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our summer vacation series on education with a conversation about environmental education. We'll talk about how teachers are bringing nature and environmental science into the classroom and the barriers that keep many teachers from making that happen. I'll also talk with a number of experts in environmental education about the need they see for this kind of teaching and how we can make it a priority, even though you don't find an environment section on any standardized test. We also want to hear from you. Are you a teacher who has made an effort to bring nature into your classroom or to bring your kids into nature? Tell your story. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our summer vacation series on education with a conversation about environmental education. Today's children spend less time outside than any generation that has come before. At the same time, evidence for climate change is growing, and many people who are hoping that the next generation will be good stewards of and strong advocates for the environment are concerned that children who don't know nature, who don't love nature, will have no desire to protect it. There are others who worry that a disconnect with the natural world actually hurts children developmentally and emotionally. Many teachers are working hard to bridge this gap, to introduce their students to the natural world, and to show them how science works in real life. Also, to cultivate a sense of respect for the planet we live on. In the next hour, I'll be talking with a number of different experts in the field of environmental education. And we want to hear from you as well, particularly if you are a teacher and you've made an effort to bring nature into your classroom or to bring your classroom outdoors into nature. We'd love to hear about your greatest successes, what has worked for you, and your biggest failures, biggest frustration. What has just bombed? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have a number of different guests we're going to talk to today, but I want to start with Mary Listina. She's a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. She taught an environmental analysis course for a number of years and is now involved with the school's extracurricular environment-related activities. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for being here today. Tell us what an environmental analysis course is or was.
The course we once offered actually was a year-long study of environmental issues, and it was more of a project-based course. And our course actually evolved based on the needs of our students, and more students were interested in taking trimester electives. So we've actually evolved our course into three trimester courses that they could take within their years at City High School. So we have an ecology course, a botany course. There is also an interest in physical geology and weather and climate. So it's changed into more course offerings, actually, for our students now.
And for students who want to specialize even more, perhaps.
Correct.
Were you behind the drive to offer more environmental programs to the students at City High?
There was definitely an interest among our students, and not only within our courseworks, but also with the extracurricular activities as well. So I've sponsored the Science Club for many years and an environmental club as well. And we've allowed our students really to do more projects that they're interested in and become involved in other like projects like water testing through iowater and various environmental aspects, I guess, as well, things that they came up with the questions for.
When students come to you, this is an elective course. So these are students who are sort of self-selecting. Are these students who tend to have a good relationship with nature and the environment already?
I have definitely seen both types of students involved within this. And I've had students who are used to hiking over the weekends or they go camping for enjoyment. And I've also had students that really didn't like to go outside at all. When we went with our environmental analysis class, we would do a creek testing and we would go down to the creek. And I had many students who didn't hike through nature at all. And so we had to teach those basic skills as well. And then students that absolutely enjoyed it, though.
So with those students who come to you that maybe haven't spent any time, much time outdoors over the years, do you see a change in them while they're in your class?
Oh, definitely. A lot of them didn't even realize some of the resources that were around them and really enjoyed getting out in the outdoors and just focusing on what's around them instead of just what's on their, you know, iPhone or iPod.
When students come to you in high school, obviously you can really delve into the science of the environment. You can also talk in depth about environmental issues. Do you try to create a balance between cultivating an appreciation for the environment and the pure enjoyment of being in the natural world, and also focusing on some of these issues that can be so frightening and overwhelming to students?
Oh, definitely. I think every teacher across the state really wants to develop a global citizen within every single student. And one of the best ways to teach environmental education is through inquiry learning, where they're asking questions, designing their own experiment, conducting their experiments, and analyzing their own results. And as you do that, you become more aware and you have a better appreciation for the natural environment around you and some of the larger topics as well, and even how pollution is affecting us. If you take a smaller case study and study how it changes over time, it really develops ownership with the students, and they know how they can take control to change their immediate surroundings.
Do you find a lot of students come to you feeling overwhelmed and hopeless, like the environmental problems that we have today are so huge that they can't do anything about it?
Well, and the key is just taking tiny steps, and we develop that too in a course, and you focus on the things that they can change versus the things that they cannot change. And I think that, you know, as a teacher, we're trying to empower our students that they can make a difference in the environment and also in other aspects of their lives as well.
How long have you been teaching in this field?
This is my 12th year teaching at City High School in Iowa City.
What made you want to teach students about the environment?
Well, one of my actually majors in college was in through earth science at actually the University of Northern Iowa. And in my experience in college, we got outside every opportunity that we can, whether we were just studying the weather and the climate in our particular region or going down and testing the water quality. And I realized what a valuable experience that was for me. And so I wanted to pass that along to my students as well.
Why was it so valuable for you?
Well, I think I really realized that I could make a difference, and I enjoyed being outside. I enjoyed looking at the birds and looking at the different wildlife and the different trees and plants around, and seeing how things just change either on a yearly basis or on a daily basis as well.
It sounds like that was a pretty big life-changing experience for you.
Oh, most definitely. And every student that I've encountered, too, that we've done outside projects with, they've always come back a few years later and talked about what a wonderful and valuable experience that they've had.
Well, Mary, we have a lot of people that I want to work in on the program today, but I want you to stay with us because I'm sure you'll have some things to add as other people bring up their experiences and different issues. I'm talking right now with Mary Lestina. She's a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City and teaches a lot of classes that focus on the environment, does a lot of extracurricular activities with students. And I want to introduce now Barb Geiger. She's aquatic education coordinator with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. She's based in Springbrook State Park in Guthrie County, and she coordinates several outreach efforts, including development and training for teachers and for other people who work with kids. Hello, Barb.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
How long have you been working with teachers, Barb?
Working with teachers or having been in the field, I'm almost at my third decade at this point, but I've been in my current position for about 23 years.
Over that time, have you seen a change in demand for teacher training?
A lot of things have changed. A lot of things get blamed on the testing, and testing is an issue. But we've also gone to a lot of training for teachers and things. And I recall some of the funding sources that were there. There was a lot of freedom for teachers to pretty much take the trainings that they wanted. There was a lot of monies available to cover costs of those trainings 20 years ago. at this point, those funding sources are not as ample, and the requirements and the proof that you're actually accomplishing something has become much more stringent, as well as the fact that teachers, and I'm just going to speak for the local school district that my children attend, you know, they have an in-service half a day every month. So giving up a Saturday or a Sunday or a lot of nights a week or even time during the summer sometimes is just more than they have time to give. So their time constraints are huge. And so you have to be very creative in how you provide training. We've had to look at some different opportunities, as well as making sure that everything that we do helps them accomplish that pile that they already have to get off their desk and the things that they already have to do in terms of accomplishing local standards, dealing with the Iowa core and all of those different kinds of things. And standardized testing is part of that as well.
So can you give me an example of some of the ways that you have changed your curriculum to make sure that nature or environmental experiences can be applied to the core curriculum?
Okay, we have worked at several different levels. I've been involved nationally for 5+ years now, working with the Association of Fish and Wildlife Service, or Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, and we have been working to one of the initiatives there is K-12 education, and really making what we do and what our agency goals and objectives are, which stewardship of natural resources is something we want to see, and making that align better with the things that are happening, especially in the formal education setting as well as the non-formal education setting. I've also been working with the state science leadership team. And in terms of standards, you know, sometimes they can be a hindrance. However, if you look at the Iowa core and the things that are going on in science there, and if you look at inquiry-based science and all of those sorts of things, many things are very much the kinds of things that the skill sets that people need to understand natural systems and to become good stewards and to think critically about the problems that we face and to apply new paradigms. And so there's huge opportunity for us. So being involved at the state level, as well as all of the materials and the trainings that we do, we have basically, you know, we have some great resource books. Many of them are just activities, but working with teachers to develop inquiry-based learning cycles that show where these sorts of activities would be great resources. What are the other resources that you would be able to access locally, like your County Conservation Board naturalist? What sorts of things are online? For example, the National Wildlife Federation, the Children in Nature Network. There are some wonderful websites that have great materials and resources, and we try to provide those, as well as making things as relevant as we can. By grade span, we just started doing things with early childhood education, which is something relatively new for us. So I brought in a lot of early childhood educators, and they have helped us to design something that makes it very appropriate for the things that they're doing at the early childhood level.
Well, Barb, stay with us. We have to take a quick break. Barb Geiger is Aquatic Education Coordinator with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Also on the line with us is Mary Listina, a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. And we'd like to hear from you as well. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we continue our summer education series, or summer vacation education series. Today we're talking about environmental education. And with me today are Mary Listina. She's a teacher at City High School in Iowa City, a physics teacher. She teaches a number of environmental courses and is involved in environmental extracurricular activities with her students. Also Barb Geiger from Guthrie County. She is a education coordinator with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources based in Springbrook State Park. She works with a lot of teachers who come to her for training about how they can bring nature and the environment into their classrooms. We'd also like to hear from you, particularly if you're a teacher who's made an effort to bring nature into your classroom or you've made an effort to bring your kids out into nature. Give us a call. Let us know what has worked for you. What kind of powerful experiences have you had, or what kind of flops have you had? What hasn't worked that you had such high hopes for? The number to call is 866-780-9100. Or if you're a parent, what kind of experiences have your children had with environmental education? What do you wish they could have in the schools? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Barb, we were talking before the break about some of the different ways that you've tried to make what you teach relevant to the curriculum that teachers all around Iowa have to teach, the core curriculum. Also, some of the references and resources that are available these days online and in many other places as well. How do you attract teachers? What kind of message do you send to say this is something that you should be doing in your classroom?
Well, the thing that we try to focus on is that it is good science and civic education, and we do that by aligning with the standards that they already need to teach to, as well as we work with the professionals that they look to for training. We work with the colleges around the state. We work with many of the pre-service training programs, as well as the area education agencies. And like I said, I'm part of the science leadership team with the state of Iowa and the Department of Education. So really trying to make sure that we understand what it is they need to be doing and making sure that it's not a sales job on our part, but that it actually is developed with that in mind and that it works with them. And then we have powerful stories from people who have done it. People like Mary is wonderful here that she's doing iWater, something we developed 15 years ago or so ago, and those sorts of things that are very valid for what they need to be doing, and we try to focus our efforts there versus attracting. We work with as much as possible.
So do you find that the teachers who come to you are self-selecting? These are people who have a strong connection to the natural environment already?
The very first ones are, but actually with pre-service, we catch most of them, and although I may find a pre-service instructor who may be prone to the outdoors, we may find that many of the teachers don't really realize the power of this, and they may not be as engaged. So your early adopters are, but I think that we do a pretty good job of getting to more of the mainstream, not necessarily those people who are willing to change everything they do and do all of the work that it would take to do it. We try to do some of those extracurricular activities in terms of making it usable for them in their teaching situation so they see the value of it as a teaching instrument, not just for the environment, so to speak.
What needs do you see that aren't being met right now?
I think that basically, and I think that this is across the board in all education, and Mary could probably speak better than I to that because she is in that practice right now. But what I hear so much from teachers is they really don't have time. Like I said, my local school district, they do lots of training, but time for real collaboration and to really work to do the sorts of project-based learning, the things that Mary was talking about, this really good, valid education and really provides an opportunity to immerse kids in outdoor-type projects or environmental-type projects is very difficult to find.
Well, Mary, since Barb gave you an in there, can I bring you in on that? What kind of needs do you see that just aren't being met right now?
Well, I definitely agree. Time is a huge issue, especially when we look at all the other things that we have to do as teachers as far as standardized tests, making sure that all the standards and benchmarks are addressed. But time for collaboration, I think, would be definitely a key to that. Funding is an issue as well. I teach in a larger school district, and so if we were to do a field trip in which we were to actually go off campus, it is a very difficult challenge, and I address about 400 ninth graders or in each grade level every single year, and to have then that common experience is a challenge in there. But the key, I think, is to bring it back to home and what can we do and what can we focus on. So it's very obtainable to take my classes outside and to do an experiment as far as measuring the effects of climate, and they can measure the temperature changes on concrete versus grasslands. I mean, that is very obtainable. And so just making it attainable for the teacher is key. And it's not just this huge project that you have to embark on in order to include environmental education into your classes.
Well, do you think many teachers are overwhelmed by the idea?
I think it's important that you're looking at the big picture. And if you think that that's how you're going to incorporate it is by taking these massive field trips all the time, which would be ideal, it's just not very realistic. And so addressing it in those smaller chunks, I think, is really helpful for teachers. And the classes that she mentioned, too, are wonderful. And I've been involved in several of those classes as well.
Well, Barb, before I let you go, for teachers who are listening right now who think, well, I'd love to get involved in some of that training, where can they find information?
Well, you know, the quickest way to get to a lot of the resources that we have, as well as information about trainings, would be the Iowa Department of Natural Resources website, and that's www.iowadnr.gov, and there's an education tab right at the top.
All right, terrific. Barb, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Barb Geiger is Aquatic Education Coordinator with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. She's based in Springbrook State Park in Guthrie County. Also with me is Mary Listina, a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. And I'm going to bring some more people into the conversation, but first I want to take an opportunity to take a couple of calls. We've got a couple of teachers on the line at 866-780-9100. Marin's on the line from Ankeny. Hello, Marin.
Yes, hi. My name is Marin Hart, and I'm a retired physical education teacher in Ankeny, and I was primarily at the Parkview Middle School, which that's a 6-7 building. And we were very blessed because we had a pond very close to us. So with the help of the DNR, we brought in kayaks and canoes and had our kids be able to have that outdoor experience. We also got a hold of them, and we had cross-country skis. So we have, you know, a nice field area close to our building that we did and still do cross-country skiing. We also have a bike trail within a block of us, and so we had Kyle's Bike Shop, and then Ankeny brought over bikes, and so the kids are able to actually, and he brought the helmets, so we were able to do outdoor biking with the kids and with volunteers. And one of my coworkers who established this has been getting the community project going, and they did a 5K, invited the parents and the community to do this opportunity as soon as school was out. We've also brought in rock climbing for the kids, and we also do fun nights for them. And we, you know, feel it's really, really, and like I say, when I say we're talking, you know, the Parkview building there, and I'm no longer involved in it, but a lot of these activities are still on the availability. But when you were talking about the problems with doing a lot of this is A, money, number two, class size, and number three, availability of quick access.
So, Marin, I hadn't even thought about this kind of activity with regards to physical education. Obviously, you're trying to get kids active, but it sounds like you were doing a lot to make them feel comfortable in their natural environment.
Well, I think it's really important that we change our train of thought with the kids. You know, it doesn't have to always be a competitive thing. It needs to be a lifetime skill. And also Parkview Schools were able to do, they got Fit for Life, and they were able to get heart rate monitors. And so our kids, you know, the kids are always, you know, being monitored, and they learned, you know, the importance of, you know, being in their zone and what that means, and to do it individually.
Well, Marin, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experiences today. I'm going to move on now to Cynthia in Des Moines. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You were a fifth grade teacher?
Yes, I just recently retired, and that was from Moulton Extended Learning Center. We're a year-round school, Des Moines.
Uh-huh. And yes, how did you try to introduce your children into the natural world?
Well, a good friend and colleague of mine, who's also recently retired, unfortunately, Carolyn Uhlenhake Walker, got a thing going with fifth graders and made it an annual event where students would be taken to Threshold of Learning Camp in Ziering, Iowa, and we would go there for 3 days, 2 nights. And this would be outdoor educational and environmental camp. Students would be issued field guides. We would have water quality testing, prairie studies, wildlife study, hiking, nature walks, plant tree studies. And students would be given a special place in which they would just kind of be by themselves for 15, 20 minutes and just get used to their surroundings, getting used to just being out in nature and feeling safe and comfortable in it.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful program, Cynthia. And Cynthia, we were talking with Mary earlier. She was talking about how teachers can't always do these giant field trips because of a lack of resources. But it sounds like you tackled a very big one.
Well, fundraising is a huge issue. The camp is very, very reasonable in cost, so we do a number of field fundraising events, those kinds of things.
And Cynthia, can you give me an example of one child that you remember that had a really powerful experience doing this, that really changed through just a couple of days?
I don't know. There's so many. We've been doing this for so many years now. I just know that when we get there, students are pretty much in awe. Just you've got all this wide open space and those kinds of things. And the thing is always, can we stay longer? Why do we have to come home so soon? Because it's just 3 days. So it's 3 days, two nights. But that would be the first thing in, that every single student would say, can we stay longer? Can we extend this experience?
Oh, that's wonderful. Cynthia, thank you so much for making your call today. And I want to introduce Kathy Scholnow. She's also involved in teaching those who will teach our children about the environment. She's an associate professor in the Division of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at UNI. She also serves on the Iowa Conservation Education Coalition Executive Committee. Hello, Kathy.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So as you work with people who will be interacting with students, with children in the environment, what do you talk to them about as far as the need for environmental education and natural experiences for children?
Well, my students here at UNI, they're very much interested in providing those experiences for youth, for adults in many different venues. It can be nonprofit organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs, their faith communities, in governmental agencies like the DNR, or even the commercial sector. And some of the things that I think is important is that they combine the knowledge of the natural resources with also the human dynamic, because as one of our callers said about when students get there, they're just in awe, and how that outdoor experiences opens up their senses for learning and providing a place of discovery. And so how does the outdoor environment, it's this open, dynamic learning environment that a lot of things can take place, learning about the facts and learning about the complex systems. But there's also an opportunity for socialization with each other and the teamwork and team building and appreciation for where they live and what's around them and having a pride of place. And how the two between knowing about their environment and having recreative experiences are valuable for our the people that we're working with to improve the their quality of their life and where they live.
Well, when you talk about youth groups and many other organizations that have been taking kids outside for decades, I wonder if sometimes these programs just perpetuate without a clear mission about what teachers or facilitators are doing when they take the children outside. Do you talk about creating a goal and understanding what you really want to accomplish with that activity?
Every program that our students provide, they need to know what is it that they're trying to accomplish. Is it trying to understand some of the concepts of the environment? Or some programs are, like with the kayaking and the skiing and the rock climbing, is to try to develop those skills and those inter and intrapersonal skills. So both are important, but many times students might have a particular focus. So if they are taking students out rock climbing, it may be developing those hand-eye coordination skills. But if they're taking them on a prairie walk, they want them to have the appreciation of the outdoors, but they want them to also learn about some of the plants and wildlife that they may see. So the professional needs to be clear with their goals and also communicate those with the teachers or the parents or whoever that they're serving.
We have seen a shift over the years with children spending more and more time inside. A few years ago, Richard Louv wrote a book called Last Child in the Woods, and he coined the term nature deficit disorder because children are not spending as much time in nature, and they don't have the kind of freedom to get out in the environment and explore it that they did just in generations previous. Have you seen a shift in children that get involved in the programs that you work with in their comfort outdoors?
Well, I think if I'm answering your question correctly, I think that there has been a shift in the amount of time children spend outside. And I think that has to go with, you know, how comfortable parents feel with their kids outside. There's more and more need and that parents want their children in supervised activities and versus maybe when you were a child, you were free to run around in the outdoors and you just had to be home when the streetlights came on. So parents also, I think, are part of how comfortable do they feel that they need to have their children in the outdoors, supervised, unsupervised. And so some of our work, too, is getting families and parents involved in the outdoors with their children. And I think some of our other speakers will speak to that today.
I know that you and your students have been involved in developing an interpretive trail for the UNI Biological Preserves Committee and coming up with ways to introduce kids to nature or to give them a natural experience. When they're out there, if a young child was taking a walk on your interpretive trail, what kinds of things would you want them to learn from that experience?
I think I would want them to be involved in the discovery and trying to uncover what kind of learning opportunities that are there. You might have your set goals, but it's opportunity for discovery as well. So if they are learning about the creek and what's in the creek, you want to be able to point out some things, but the excitement of what they discover and what they find is important to because that's going to get them curious and want to explore and inquire more. I mean, that's the issue of inquiry-based learning, is to get them to ask the questions, not be told the information.
We're talking about environmental education today, and with me is Kathy Scholl. She's an associate professor in the Division of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at UNI. Also with us, Mary Lestina, a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. We'd love to hear from you as well about experiences you've had with kids in the environment, with teaching them about the world around them. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're continuing our summer education series right now, and we'll continue it today on The Exchange as well at noon with a look at vocational education. Right now, we're focusing on environmental education. And with me are Mary Lestina. She's a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. Also, Kathy Scholl, who's an associate professor in the Division of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at the University of Northern Iowa. And joining us now is Brian Gibbs. He's a naturalist at Clayton County Conservation's Osborne Nature Center in Elkader, Iowa. Hello, Brian.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my passion.
And you are a destination for many families, many class field trips, people who want to introduce kids into the natural world. What you call this your passion. What is your goal when you have an opportunity to interact with children in nature?
My goal is to give those children an immersive experience, and by that I mean something that it's direct. It's a direct experience that fosters primary learning, where these students are granted the opportunity to learn, to discover, to explore the natural world. And through my programs, I like to place an emphasis on character development. So one thing that I like to teach during my programs is the phrase knowledge plus caring equals responsible choices. So the outcomes of what the children are learning depends on how much they know and how much they care about something. So my role as a naturalist is an educator to provide them the knowledge in hopes that they will develop the caring to make those responsible choices, not only with the environment, but also with their classmates, with their families, and ultimately their communities.
Over the years, I'm sure you've done many activities with children. What is your favorite thing to do when you get a class of children out to your nature center? What is your favorite activity and perhaps the most powerful one that you do again and again?
The most powerful one that I always come back to is we hiked on the trail down to the sandbar on the Volga River. And, you know, I give the guidelines of the students that they're not going to be allowed to be in the water or be swimming or anything silly or goofy like that. And I lay out those guidelines, and then I teach them about one thing that's very important, and that is geology. And when I teach them about geology, I teach them about minerals. And the same minerals that make up rocks, those are the same minerals that are found within our own body. And so the students get a little bigger grasp of what they're learning on the sandbar why they're studying rocks. And the next thing that I like to be able to do to give the children a chance to explore their child passion is they get to skip rocks. And you would be amazed by the amount of children that say, "How do you skip a rock? I've never skipped a rock before." And, you know, I tell them there is no wrong or right way to skip a rock. environmental education is about the process. It's not about the ultimate product. And after we skip rocks, on my way out, I pick a cottonwood leaf, and all the students want to know what that leaf is. And I teach them an easy way to identify the cottonwood leaf is by its triangular shape, and it's also the leaf that blows in the wind. And what I end on is I believe there should be an emphasis always placed in environmental education on the role of storytelling. So I take that leaf, and I fold it up in the shape of the teepee, and I ask the students, what does this look like? And they often respond to teepee. And I tell them the story of how the Lakota Sioux Indians designed their teepees after watching children fold the leaves back and forth. And that's a very powerful experience when students see that just by playing with leaves and skipping rocks and being outdoors, they can be the creators of things, and they recognize that. So that's ultimately my favorite activity that I try to do with them.
When children come to you, do you find that a lot of the kids have never skipped rocks, have never played with leaves, have never really been in that kind of environment to look around them and feel the air and listen to the water?
I don't think that they never have. It's just that it's not been frequent enough. And, you know, as a naturalist, you know, it is my my passion, my experience to provide those experiences. However, you know, I can go into as many classrooms as I want to do programs and presentations. To me, the ultimate decider lies upon what happens when those children go home. As an educator, I can put all the energy and passion that I want to into a program and all the content. But ultimately, are they going to remember that experience and have a positive feeling tone from that experience that they're going to ask their parents, hey, take me out to the river, let's go skip rocks, or hey, let's go camping, let's go canoeing, let's do those things. So I think ultimately I am just a moderator in their ultimate choices.
So it sounds like you put a great deal of emphasis on fun to make sure that the kids have a fun experience when they're out there.
Yeah, I place an emphasis on creating positive learning experiences for my students. You know, the natural environment is a great place, you know, for inquiry learning to take hold. And, you know, I like to be able to give them content, but I also want them to be able to discover their own content, to discover their own inquiries. And, you know, I am satisfied when children walk away with questions from my program. When they leave me not feeling that they've learned everything, that is what I want them to walk away with them. I want to give them the desire to learn more about where our food truly comes from, where do we get our shelter, where does our water come from, is it clean, is it not clean? So those are some of the things that I try and give them.
Brian Gibbs is a naturalist at Clayton County Conservation's Osborne Nature Center, and I want to introduce our final guest of the day. This is Dr. Kamyar Enshayan. He's director of the University of Northern Iowa Center for Energy and Environmental Education. Hello, Kamyar.
Hello. Nice to be with you.
As someone who you do a lot of outreach about environmental education, you're also involved in a university that focuses on education. What should schools be doing as far as environmental education goes, do you believe?
Really my guiding thoughts that have shaped my career and my work have come from Aldo Leopold, who 60 years ago wrote in a Sand County Almanac. He said that we abuse land because we see it as a commodity belonging to us. And then he said, when we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. So this fundamental idea to me is what environmental education and ecological literacy is all about. It's about citizenship. It's about how do we as Iowans live and get along with the community of life in Iowa. It's not just for kids, it's for all ages. And it fundamentally is about how do we live here without messing it up, without causing harm to faraway places as a result of things we're doing here. So that's kind of what environmental education ought to be. And I think, as you heard from your other guests, that it's really wonderful to hear all the incredible work that is going on. In my work, mostly we're dealing with adults and community leaders, teachers. A number of our staff are working with wide variety of citizens in Iowa who are doing this work. So it's really, our work is about engaging Iowans through community scale and solutions, so that people see that another way is possible. There are other ways of being here without inflicting damage to our waters and soils.
I think you bring up an important point. I want to bring Mary back into the conversation, who's a teacher at City High School in Iowa City. And Mary, of course, the environment and issues in the environment, the growing evidence for global warming, some of the issues that we're hoping that the next generation will be able to work on and find solutions for, a lot of that has been politicized. Do you have a concern in your classroom? Has anyone expressed a concern about making sure that you're teaching about the environment in a way that doesn't advocate a particular political perspective?
Well, I think, especially right at first when we started introducing global climate change, and that was one of our focus in our weather and climate unit, there was some concern that there was more of a political agenda associated with that. And I think that was attributed to with Al Gore's moving and stance that he had with the Inconvenient Truth. But I think it's really evolved since then that, you know, students are now aware and they can look at the climate history and look at the charts and see about how, you know, global climate change is actually happening. And the science, if you're looking at the proof, which is what I try to really stress in my class, what evidence do we have to support this, is really solid with that. I've had concern, though, sometimes addressed with students about what actually is causing that. And that's really where the issue has been within my classroom. And I think as educators, it's our job really to step back and say, all right, well, we're scientists first. Let's look at the proof. Let's look at the evidence and try to analyze it from that aspect. And then what could potentially be causing these changes? And a lot of times students then are led to that discovery, hey, you know, maybe we are making an impact on this. What should we do about this? And when you're arriving at that, the students, again, become more aware of themselves and how they affect their personal environment and then the small steps that they can do to make a difference with that. And again, we really focus in on what they know as scientists, what is the evidence actually saying, and then how they can actually make a difference within that.
We have a number of callers on the line. Gordon on Twitter wanted to mention, he says he thinks that more environmental education could be richer if schools used 12-month calendar and curriculum. I'm sure a lot of teachers who want to do gardening with their students find it frustrating that the growing season occurs outside of the year. Jill in Des Moines is a teacher who does gardening with her students. Hello, Jill.
Hi.
Hi. What kind of things do you do with your students?
What I focused on is monarch-related gardening, so having the students understand that there is a way to provide habitat, to reintroduce prairie habitat, especially milkweed, so that monarchs can actually have a way station. There are certified monarch way stations throughout the country for monarchs to migrate through. And then we can connect to Hispanic Heritage Month, talking about where the monarchs go to Mexico, connecting to even spiritual beliefs there, and character counts. We raise monarchs from eggs in the classroom.
So how long have you been doing this?
I've brought students toward that for several years by getting them out doing aisle water work. Another caller mentioned that, getting kids out to creeks. And from that, it kind of led into having some housing for butterflies, and then it led into working with the school district to discuss what could be done at the two buildings where I've been, connecting also to West Des Moines Valley High School's environmental ed curriculum, because they have a prairie there, and taking students there. So over a period of years, there have just been a number of things that have evolved, and students wanted to do some research. They did a PowerPoint show in the winter months, so we talk about what can they do when it's not time to go out and plant. They created a survey and a PowerPoint show about and did the research, you know, about monarchs and shared that with other students and their parents, which someone mentioned making the connection to home. You know, then some students ended up saying, well, we want to plant milkweed at home, you know, and they shared that show with their parents. So.
Well, Jill, that sounds like a wonderful experience for your students.
They really enjoyed it. I've loved seeing them take off with excitement, and my colleagues have been great.
Have you had a lot of support from the school for doing this kind of?
Various colleagues, especially like our Spanish teacher, Tammy Dan, I want to mention. She's done a lot of connections to that, as well as Sherry Harper, second grade teacher with character counts and caring about nature. So that whole full circle holistic approach to nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jill, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience with us today. And we're nearly out of time, and I want to ask each of you, before we leave, what you see as the greatest priority right now in environmental education, in public education. And, Kamyar, I'll let you go first.
I think the highest priority should be the children and need to see their parents, their grown-ups who are guiding them as heroes in this, in dealing with this immense environmental issues we're dealing with. We can't not talk with children about these things. And as Sandra Steingraber has mentioned in her latest book, Raising Elijah, do we want our children to see us as good Germans or as part of the French resistance when it comes to climate change and water quality and soil erosion? We have to, as grown-ups, as teachers, as educators, we have to deal with these through they need to see us as actively involved in dealing with these issues. That's the most important thing we can do.
Well, and she also said that it makes it less frightening to children if they see their parents trying to do something about one of these big problems as well. Kamyar Enshayan is director of the UNI Center for Energy and Environmental Education. I want to give each of you a very brief chance to respond to that question. Kathy Scholl, I'll go to you next. She's an associate professor in the Division of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at UNI. Kathy, what's our biggest priority?
Well, there's many things, but I'm going to add to Kamyar's of and one of the previous callers, availability of quick access to the outdoors. You know, we need to look at Iowa's land base. Where can we get children into the outdoors? And right now, I think the Iowa DNR's initiative to establish the water trails in Iowa is an important first step so that we have those communal public places that we can go. So availability of easy access public places to our Iowa landscape is important.
Kathy Scholl, thank you very much. And Brian Gibbs, it's your turn next. What is our biggest priority?
I think our biggest priority is recognizing environmental education is fluid. It is a subject that can be infused within all other core subjects. It can be infused in art, can be infused in physical education, with literature. So being able to see environmental education not as something that stands alone, but that is holistically important to the development of our students, our schools, and our communities, and giving students those chances to learn that and to appreciate where they live, where our Iowa is, and why we call it Iowa.
Brian, thank you. Brian is a naturalist with Clayton County Conservation. And finally, Mary, you have the last word. Mary Listina, quickly.
Well, definitely having a common experience and allowing them to enjoy their natural environment around them, but also incorporating it outside the school day. It's not just the classroom that they have to focus in on. It's outside opportunities as well.
Mary, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Listina is a physics teacher at City High School in Iowa City. We continue our education series today on The Exchange at Noon with a look at vocational education. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt, a production of Iowa Public Radio News.